Good afternoon, everyone, and greetings to those of you on the webcast. Sorry, my title didn't get into the bulletin. It's either Unleavened Lessons or Lessons from Unleavened Bread. Take your pick. So we are commanded to put leaven out of our houses by the first day of unleavened bread, and then to eat unleavened bread for 7 days, hence the name of the feast. I'll quote from Exodus 12:15. It's pretty familiar. You don't need to turn there. It says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven out of your houses. For if anyone eats what is leavened from the first day until the seventh, that person shall be cut off from Israel. Every English translation says, on the first day you shall remove leaven. I can't prove it. I don't know Hebrew well enough, but it could, in my eyes, be translated as by the first day. Anyway, after someone has removed leaven from their house, the focus has to shift from away from de-leavening. The leaven's already gone. Are you going to look for it again for 7 days? Yes, we do stumble across some overlooked leaven during the week. I imagine everyone has a story or two. But that's the exception. If you find it, you get rid of it, but you don't spend 7 days continuing to search for leaven. The rest of the command is to eat unleavened bread, which, as we know, pictures putting Christ in. That's the new focus. We don't spend our lives looking for more sin to put out. We put in the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. 1 Corinthians 5:8. Let me talk a bit about bread in ancient Israel. Bread was their primary food source, their primary food at every meal. Other items were secondary, whereas today, in our culture, bread is secondary, if served at all. For the Israelites, it wasn't a meal without bread. It's estimated that bread provided over 50% of the ordinary person's calories. Grinding the grain was a difficult and time-consuming task. It's estimated that it required up to 3 hours of effort every day to produce enough flour to make sufficient bread for a family of five. The grain, barley or wheat or some other, was ground by hand in a giant stone mortar and pestle called a quern. At least I think that's how it's pronounced. They couldn't buy ready-made loaves of bread. They couldn't even buy ready ground flour. The point is, bread was a big deal to them. Let me shift to John chapter 6. Most of the chapter is taken up with what is called the Bread of Life discourse, where Jesus says, I am the bread of life. He says it more than once. And I am the living bread which came down from heaven. And this is the day after the feeding of the 5,000 with five barley loaves and two fishes. So he already had their attention. He also said in John 6:58, whoever feeds on this bread, referring to himself, will live forever. So here, thus starts the lessons. When I retired, I began a tradition of making some kind of unleavened bread every day during the days of unleavened bread, except Sabbaths. That may sound like a lot, but this year it means 4 days. Yesterday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. I make some old favorites, and I make a point of trying some new recipes every year. And what follows are some observations for doing this for a few years. Here's a lesson. There are different kinds of unleavened bread. May seem obvious. People may assume that unleavened bread means the square crackers made by Manischewitz called matzos. But these are a relatively recent invention. Manischewitz perfected the machinery for the square matzos in 1903. And I gotta say, for over 20 years, I used to think there was unleavened bread and then there was matzo. But I've learned that the word matzo is just a Hebrew word that means unleavened bread. Now, this may be stating the obvious, but unleavened bread comes in many forms, from sweet to savory. Pies, cookies, crackers, pasta, soft flatbread, hard flatbread, even unleavened cake. And what this reminds me of is all the different ways that you can ingest the Bible, as in putting Christ in. So let me list a few different ways that I thought of that one can ingest, devour the Bible, put Christ in. First of all, simply read it. There are schedules to read the Bible cover to cover in a year's time. It's about 3 chapters a day. Or you can listen to an audio Bible, and that takes about 75 hours. An average reader will take about 50 hours to read the whole Bible. If you're a fast reader, maybe 40. And some variations that you can do with it, well, try different translations. Read it in what's known as the inspired order. Or read it in a different language, if you can. You can study a single book. Some people like to read and reread a single book or even a single chapter to get more out of it. And some people, even in United, suggest memorizing chapters. You can follow the center references. If you have a study Bible, it will link scriptures in the where you're reading to related scriptures throughout the Bible. It's especially useful when studying a single book or chapter. Just follow all of the center references. You can study a single word. A concordance, like the Strong's Concordance, lists every occurrence of every word in the Bible. Maybe you want to pick a word like covenant or grace or justice or name or bread. And Strong's is available in print and online. You can study a topic. Knave's Topical Bible, for example. You can use that to research a topic like bread. Knave is a type of concordance with over 20,000 topics and subtopics, referencing over 100,000 verses. Knave's is also available in print and online. You can read church literature to brush up on your doctrines, to know when and why we observe what we do. You can listen to or read sermons. There are tens of thousands of sermons online, searchable by title or speaker. You can learn some Hebrew or Greek. Sometimes some passages just don't make sense outside of their original language. For example, in Genesis 3:20, don't turn there, it says, the man called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. Does that make any sense in English? Not really. The Hebrew for Eve is Chava, and the Hebrew for living is Chaya. So she was called Chava because she was the mother of all Chaya. Well, now that makes sense, doesn't it? The Hebrew word for Noah's Ark is not the same word used for the Ark of the Covenant. But the word for Noah's Ark is the same as the word for the basket that carried baby Moses down the Nile. I have a quote here that before Martin Luther became anti-Semitic, he said the Hebrew language is the best language of all because no one can really understand the scriptures without it. Here's another lesson. It takes time. Not only does it take time to make breads, cookies, pies, noodles, flatbread, it also takes time to do some recipe research. But many churches publish unleavened bread cookbooks or have websites of recipes. United does. And I like looking at cookbooks, so I don't consider this a hardship. I get a lot of ideas. I make lists of things that I want to make. But baking does take time. And simply reading the Bible takes time. Digging into it will take even more time. At least you don't have to stand while you're studying. You could consider an audio Bible or downloaded sermons to listen to if you're commuting or on a long car trip. My suggestion is that you plan your study like a recipe and make time for it every day. It is our true daily bread. Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. And for me, looking for topics and preparing sermonettes helps me to do study. Another lesson. It's easier to avoid leaven if you're making your own bread. You're more likely to encounter leaven when you're eating in a restaurant or a fast food place than at home. At home, we simply don't have any leaven on hand to inadvertently make leavened bread. The grocery store, the convenience store, at the gas station, well, these can be leaven hazards. You could just absentmindedly grab a bag of donuts or something. Just be on guard. Likewise, somebody who is reading the Bible regularly is more likely to avoid problem situations. Here's another lesson. I never get to all of the recipes that I want to try. By the time I make some necessities, and yes, lefse is a necessity, and I make a few other old favorites, I don't always have time to make all the new things that I want to try. This reminds me of visiting with people after church services. I don't get around to all of my old friends, much less to spend time with new people. And I do see this as an area that I could improve in. Another lesson. I don't like all of the recipes I try. This too may be stating the obvious. Some recipes look good in pictures, or the description sounds good, or maybe somebody else made it and raved about it, but the end product doesn't meet my expectations. An analogy would be some forms of Bible study that work well for one person may not work well for another. And some recipes don't always work right. Maybe it doesn't come out the same every single time, or it doesn't come out the way somebody else made it. I spent a lot of time trying to diagnose why a recipe works well one time but not another. It's like reading scriptures that are tricky to understand. Maybe you just studied into a subject, but sometime later you can't quite recall how it goes anymore. Sometimes maybe you have to treat it like a musical instrument where you practice until you get it right. Here's a lesson that happens to me. Sometimes you have to get personal with your bread. I mean, we use different tools and machines to make bread, mixers, cups, rolling pins, cookie cutters, ovens, bread machines. But some dough you just have to mix and knead by hand. Well, to me, it's like listening to a sermon or reading an article about the Bible is a great way to learn. Other people think of things that I wouldn't, but it's not quite the same as actually reading and studying the Bible itself. You sometimes just have to handle the Word of God yourself. Study to show yourself approved, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Here's another lesson. This is a good one. I end up with too much, so I have plenty to share. If you bake every day for two people, there will be extra, no matter how good it is. Putting Christ in is important for developing the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, etc., which gives us something to share with others. Freely you have received, freely give. YMMV, my conclusion. It seems that every year I think of new lessons or new analogies, or I see symbolism in a new way when I'm making some kind of unleavened bread. These few that I've listed are some that have occurred to me over the years. Your mileage may vary. I would like to hear what lessons you may have learned about putting Christ in by keeping the days of unleavened bread. And I have a bunch of links in here. They'll be in the transcript when it's uploaded.